Empire.
You thought you knew, but you have no idea. It's the urban sports scene.
You are listening to the urban sports scene with myself, Wole, and Will T, the homie Ray Jeezy's out. And we are also part of Amp Pirate Media at amppiratemedia.com. What's going on, Will T?
Nothing much, man. Everything's good. Just coming off of the high of watching the Super Bowl. You know, no more football. But, you know, I'll be all right because, you know, my true love and passion is the NBA. So.
I know, right? We can jump right into the NBA now. But yeah, the Super Bowl was dope, man. And we'll talk about later on the halftime show in detail. But I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the whole Super Bowl, to be honest with you, in terms of the optics of it. But yeah, an exciting game. Then it was Valentine's Day for folks out there listening. You know what I mean? I hope everybody enjoyed their Valentine's Day on Monday, which was kind of different, right? Having the Super Bowl like on Valentine's Day weekend.
Just another day, Monday for me. Hey, to all of those lovebirds out there who have someone special, I can understand how it was more than just a day for you.
I guess for me, it's relatively new, man. I spent it with my significant other. And
oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, man. So I was at the Wizards game on Saturday, was out Friday. I didn't do Monday, you know, Monday because, you know, folks had to work and whatnot, but, and I had
no,
to
go. No, it's because you're cheap.
No, not, dude, no, I'm not. I spent the bag on Friday and Friday and Saturday, you know what I mean? Okay, I was a good right. boyfriend, bro. You know, I'm using African cheap. You're right, you know, that's key with a buck. Let's not lie now. Let's not, like, lie the story. No, I'm not changing the narrative of the story of Wole or Wally, whatever you want to call me. I'm not changing the narrative on me. I'm saying, like, to your point, Will T, if you know me a while, like, don't like spending a lot of money. I don't. It's a fact. A little stingy at times. I like to think that I have common sense. You know what I mean?
it's frugality. You just save money for the big dream. That's all it is.
Exactly.
That's
hey, all it is. You say that. I just say that I'm being smart with my money. You know, that's all. That's all. But yeah, I enjoyed myself. We had a good time. So it was what it was. But I'm with you in terms of normally Valentine's Day. I mean, Valentine's Day to me is still a hustle. I ain't changing. It's a hustle. But if it's important to somebody, I'm all about, you know, supporting the individual.
Absolutely,
who's important
man.
Too. So it is what it is, man. But yeah, man, it was a lot, man. A lot of fun, a lot of alcohol, and stuff. I drank a lot. I ate too, man. I ate like a beast too. I'm trying to drop some weight. You know what I'm saying? Like some extra. Cause I eat, like, you know, I ate some stuff I normally don't eat anymore. But
hey, man, that's why I tell people all the time, man, forget the January New Year's resolution.
Uh-huh.
You're going to eat like crap.
Facts.
Up into the Super Bowl.
Yep.
Then after the Super
that's
Bowl,
where it's at.
Then that's when you do your thing,
bro. You know what? You're telling some real stuff right now. Some real stuff. After the Super Bowl is where it's at, though. It is, dog. And ain't that January
stuff?
Uh-huh.
You gotta think about it. You got the. And I know we're getting off topic.
No, go ahead, bro. We here.
The playoff weekend, NFL playoff weekend.
Uh-huh.
You got then you have the Super Bowl.
Uh-huh.
And then, you know, some people like to go out of town towards the All-Star game.
Yeah.
You know? So depending on when the All-Star game hits, you know, bro, the things you got to prioritize.
Bro, you preaching, man. You're keeping it a buck. That's what it is, though. Like, that's just what how it works. Like, you're right, after February is where it's at, because even the Super Bowl, I mean, the Super Bowl is another day of real grubbing. Like, you're not going to deprive yourself during the Super Bowl, right? Like,
no,
you're going to, either you're going to do some, whatever, you're gonna, whatever you like or you fancy, you're gonna go all in into that joint.
Absolutely. I know I went all in on Sunday.
I know that's right. Shoot, I had some buffalo. I made some buffalo turkey wings. Them things were on point. Yeah, bro. Man, maybe some two big, like, jumbo buffalo turkey wings. Put that, you know, made some sauce. You know, I used some little sweet, with the sweet baby, but whatever, buffalo sauce.
You don't give out no free.
Facts, dog. Well, you know what? I'm not going to talk about the brand. Some buffalo sauce, some barbecue sauce mixed into the joint. It was on point. You know what I mean? I tore that thing up. Then I got some creamy Italian from the grocery store. Cause I did find that joint. It's not like Jasper's creamy Italian, but it's good enough. It does the job.
I get it.
You know what I'm saying? It does the job. But hey, Amp Power Media hosts multiple DMV sports podcast shows, such as the John Conn Report, hosted by ESPN Washington Football Team. I said it's not Washington Football Team anymore. ESPN Washington Commanders Insider John Conn and Jones Football, hosted by USA Today Insider Mike Jones. Subscribe to our podcast on Stitcher, Spotify, iTunes, TuneIn, iHeartRadio, and Google Podcasts. Just search the Urban Sports Scene. Make sure you subscribe to the Urban Sports Scene YouTube channel as well. Also, check us out. Follow our Urban Sports Scene IG page as well. This show can be found on Podcast DC, the new local app with hundreds of options in local news and health in the DMV region. Download the Podcast DC app to hear all of the Amplifier shows as well as other great content.
Don't forget to tweet us at Urban Sports Scene, at Urban Sports Scene at Instagram, and hit us up on our Urban Sports Scene Facebook page.
All right. Also, join our Urban Sports Scene Facebook group. Search Urban Sports Scene, sports bloggers, sports podcasters, and sports debates. We'll see.
Let's get into our tradition, the pregame, baby.
Here's what we have on tap. We'll talk about Daniel Snyder possibly losing ownership of the Washington Commanders at 8:20. We'll talk about the Wizards acquiring Kristaps Porzingis. And finally, we'll talk about the Rams winning Super Bowl 56. All right. It was reported that NFL owners are leaning towards stripping ownership from Washington Commanders owner Daniel Snyder. Thoughts, Wiltie?
Today was a milestone day. Uh-huh. And I don't know if anyone's kind of been keeping up with everything that's going on after the name change in the uniform reveal. But today was the day that Congress requested information from Daniel Snyder regarding the case, regarding the new Tiffany Johnson accusation.
Yeah.
Right?
Uh-huh.
And to my knowledge, he did not turn over those documents willfully. Now, Congress has the right and the power to subpoena people. Will Congress subpoena Daniel Snyder? Will Congress subpoena Roger Goodell? Will Congress subpoena Beth Wilkinson?
Yeah.
In attempts to get the information and to get everything out in the open that they want from Daniel Snyder. Now, I say if that happens, and Daniel Snyder and Roger Goodell have to go in front of Congress and testify,
mm-hmm.
I can assure you, that is not the heat. I'm not 100% sure certain.
Yeah.
But it is close. This is about as close to a sure thing that you will start to see the tide turn against Daniel Snyder, and there will start to be louder whispers about the other 31 owners just saying that this is bad for business. Because one thing you can't have is one thing for you to discriminate against African American coaches,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So that's one section. That's one large section of minority of your fan base.
Yeah.
But women also can't have both. And the easier one to fix, is definitely get rid of Dan Snyder.
Of course, of course. I think that I agree with you. To me, I think that it doesn't. It won't even get. It gets to the point where if it's a problem to a point. It will get to a point where if they have to like you said subpoena Daniel Snyder and Roger Goodell, they're gonna already take action right before it gets to that point. They feel that's the vibe, right? They're going to take action early, and so in that case, you know, like I've said before, the owners are like they're a mafia, so they ain't going. No one's going to hurt the shield of their brand. You know what I mean? Of ownership, like no one's going to hurt that. In terms of how they are being portrayed, like you mentioned, like you have what's going on with African American coaches, and then add on to how Daniel Snyder, I mean, his organization, what his representation is within the Washington Commanders, how this organization has looked upon in terms of the reports about how they've been, you know, disrespecting women and sexual harassment and all of that stuff. So if it gets to that point, yeah, then I agree with you. I totally agree that the end of the that he will likely lose ownership of this team. I have a big issue with the NFL as a whole and ownership. I mean, just with owners, period. And because what you just mentioned, because this what's really been annoying me of late. It has nothing to actually it has nothing to do with Daniel Snyder. It's in conjunction too, though. But I'm really annoyed about how people are kind of like sweeping under what's going on with minority coaches. Like I'm really starting to get annoyed by it. I didn't think it was going to bother me as much, but it has. Just because of what's going, I feel like people ain't putting up the heat. This is what's going on with, because I guess because I like Brian Flores a lot. Like I do like Brian Flores a lot. I would like the same energy put into these owners. You know what I'm saying? Like what? Because he's really being blackballed for real now. Because he's putting a lawsuit, and you see it. It's obvious. And no knock on the dudes that were hired. And some of these dudes are black dudes, right? Like I like Lovie mm-hmm. Smith. I like Lovie Smith. But typically, right, when we're looking for a head coach, and Lovie Smith his last few years as a head coach wasn't the best, right? It wasn't the best. As a head coach, right? Mm-hmm. You got a black head coach who has shown you nothing but winning, and he's young, and the Texans had an opportunity to get him, but you go with Lovie. And no knock on Lovie. Again, no knock on Lovie, because Lovie has been to the Super Bowl, right? So, and I think Lovie's a good coach, and I do want Lovie to get all the shine and get all the flowers he can get. And I'm glad he's got another opportunity. But I do see, like, you know what? Like, I feel like, hey, we're going to give it to Lovie. We'll give him this job, and we're going to avoid the other dude because of a certain reason. And even what's going on, and we're going on in Miami with the other coach. I'm just saying, like, I want that same energy for everything. Because I think ownership in the NFL is a bunch of you know what.
I'll take it a step further.
Mm-hmm.
Where was Lovie Smith at last year?
Was he with the Texans?
He was with the Texans.
Yes.
Who was the coach last year?
What's his name?
David Culley.
Yeah, Culley, yeah.
Who was ceremoniously let go after one season.
And who wasn't?
Let's look at it.
Yeah, go ahead.
So let's look at it this way. So David Culley, probably exceeded expectations given
yes,
that
what he had to
Deshaun
deal with.
Watson was the coach.
Yes.
Did not suit up and play for that,
agreed.
That organization.
Agreed.
David Culley was a first-time head coach.
Uh-huh.
Had a untenable, unlikely a situation where he was, let's be honest, where he wasn't given the best opportunity to be successful. For one, because, you know, starting from the first day of training camp, he had to go out there and answer about the Deshaun Watson
yep.
situation. And it seemed as if, as an organization, you were hearing, depending on who you talked to, you were hearing two or three different things. So that's one. Deshaun Watson not suiting up. But still, he went out, and I think they won, what, four or five games?
Right, and competed.
And competed
with a rookie quarterback.
And won with a rookie quarterback, a third round rookie quarterback who wasn't that highly touted.
Yeah,
but they got very good above. They got above average production from him.
Uh huh.
So for Lovie Smith to kind of take that job,
oh,
you already know.
Got you. You know what's it? You know what
you
time it
there
is.
There and you see kind of what went on.
Good point.
It makes me question. Not question. I'm not going to question Lovie Smith's motives, but
yeah.
It just goes to. I'll put it this way. It goes to show you just how coveted
a head coaching
those jobs are.
Yeah.
Right.
Agreed.
Because there's only 32 of them, and if you were in the building and you saw that, and like I don't know certain particulars, but from the outside looking in, it didn't seem as if David Culley was put in the best position to win long term, and you still take that job. You know, kind of what's that saying about, you know,
about loving
coaches in general.
Oh, just joking.
Not coaches, but coaches in general, just that their desire to have that top spot in one of those 32 jobs.
So I do have a question. We're going back to Snyder. So say Snyder loses the ownership of the squad. So what does that mean for Ron Rivera? Like that's a whole new ownership, a whole new team. What does that mean for Jason Wright,
as
president?
I guess, you know, if he's forced to sell,
yeah,
you know, there's one or two things that happen.
Uh-huh.
There's either A, the league would help Daniel Snyder find a potential seller, someone who they like, who they know that they can get 24 that the owners would get 24 out of the 32 owners to approve a sale to, or the NFL could just say, look, you're so bad for business, we're going to buy you out at a premium. And the NFL will own the league, will own the Washington Commanders until they find a suitable owner. So I guess if the NFL were to own the team, you will probably see Jason Wright, you probably see Ron Rivera, those guys stay in place until a owner is found.
Yeah, that makes sense. I wonder, like, for Washington fans, they like it depends. I'm always interested in how fans are, if they like Ron Rivera, but they hate Daniel Snyder, and it's like, okay, if they get a new owner, like, say, for instance, a lot of fans are throwing out the name Jeff Bezos, right? They're throwing out Jeff Bezos. So say Bezos owns the team and doesn't want Ron Rivera. Like, how does that – or Jason Wright, you know, because they've become two figureheads in this fan base that people admire. If the owner doesn't want them, how do fans react to the new owner?
Well, I can pretty – with the heat that the NFL is getting about minorities and ownership position, front office positions, coaching positions, I'm pretty sure that when the owners or Roger Goodell and the owners vet a new incoming owner, they would say, what are your thoughts on Jason Wright?
Facts.
And they would probably lobby to have him in place for a few more years and say, hey, why don't you see what this guy can do for you in this franchise? As you're starting to, you know, learn the ropes of the NFL and being an NFL owner, right? So I'm pretty sure they would possibly lobby for Jason Wright. Now, Ron Rivera, that's a different thing. Here's why.
I'm listening with you.
Because coaches are often seen as interchangeable in the NFL. Yeah. You see how many, you know, we think about coaches who've been longstanding at their job. In their position, there's John Harbaugh, there's Belichick,
great coaches,
there's Tomlin.
Yep.
Right, so those are guys who probably we think are probably the most tenured coaches, right? In the NFL, every other coach is usually out of there after 4 or 5 years, right? Or if they, you know, they have a stretch where they aren't successful, don't make the playoffs for 2 or 3 years, they're gone.
So you probably
see a new owner allow Ron Rivera to have his 1 year, maybe a year and a half if he's successful, maybe 2 years if he's successful. But if he isn't, you know, making the playoffs, getting that team in Super Bowl contention, you probably will see him let go.
Because your owner's gonna get the new owner is gonna get his people right in terms of you know what I mean. So that's one thing that, you know, fans have to kind of look at. And also, I'll throw this out to you too, Will T. What are the chances to you? And I'm sure, like, to me, I agree. And I think I know what you're going to say, because I will agree with you. Like, what would you say if the new owner isn't, like, married to having a team here? Maybe the new owner wants to, like, relocate the team.
No, that's not even in consideration.
I've seen fans put that out there on like social media.
No, that's not even in consideration, my brother. There will be a team in this region because it's too lucrative.
Facts.
This is too lucrative of a region for you to take away a team from, right? You got Maryland, you got DC and Virginia, you got three, you got two states and one I don't even know what they're called. DC does it. It's not a state because they don't have voting rights, but a district rather.
It's the most powerful. Voting rights, you got real political.
DC is the most powerful city in the world.
Yeah.
Right, because this is where the president. This is where all our policies are made.
Exactly.
So you're not taking the NFL team away from there. Now, what you could possibly see, what will get interesting is. The lease, I believe, at FedEx Field is up in 2027.
Yeah.
We are in 2022. It usually takes about 3 years to build, 2 or 3 years, depending on certain variables, to build a stadium. Now, would the owners, you know, now, one of the, I guess, stipulations that came from that Beth Wilkinson investigation was, Daniel Snyder, they fined the franchise $10 million. And Daniel Snyder was absolved of all responsibility day-to-day of running the football team, except finding a stadium deal, negotiating and finding a stadium deal. Now, would the owners kick him out prior to him getting a stadium, negotiating to get a place for a new stadium?
I don't know.
And then, you know, kind of letting whoever, if they want to get a new ownership in, that owner paying all of that money, then putting more money on top of it for a new stadium. I just don't think that's the most frugal move.
Yeah.
Or the smartest move.
Only time will tell, man. We'll see how this is all going to end up. For a lot of Washington fans, you know, everybody needs this Daniel Snyder drama to end. So he has to get out. He got to get out, bro. People need to, they need to be cleansed of this drama. Folks, everybody needs to be cleansed of the Daniel Snyder. I mean his years of owning this team. They need to be cleansed.
I get it. But I'll say the grass is always green on the other side.
I know. Believe me, I know. That's one thing people have to kind of, when you're doing your due diligence, right? To your point, Will T, like what you see right now, you know, what you see right now is horrible. But like you said, man, you can have some jacked up situations where people are not even trying. So it is what it is. But the Wizards acquired the Unicorn. That's Will T's old homie. We'll talk about it after the break. You're listening to the Urban Sports Scene.
The Agents.
You dig?
Deuces on Ampire Media. That's AmpireMedia.com.
Listening to the Urban Sports Scene with Will T and myself, Wole. The homie Ray Jeezy is out, and we are part of Ampire Media at AmpireMedia.com.
Okay, the Wizards packaged a deal packaged Spencer Dinwiddie and Davis Bertāns to acquire Kristaps Porzingis at the trade deadline. Probably one of the more surprising trades, right, I would say, that occurred at the deadline. Wole, does this move improve the Wizards?
I think so. I like Kristaps Porzingis. You know, I mean, a lot of people say, like, they say, well, will he be on the court, you know, because he's always hurt. I think he was trying so hard to fit in with Luka. But it's just, you know, he was trying to make it work so badly. But I think in this situation in Washington, I feel like he'll know himself a little bit more. He can kind of relax. You're not playing with the next big thing, and Luke, you know what I'm saying, you're playing with, like, no knock on Bradley Beal. Bradley Beal's a great player, he's a good player, a good scorer, but you're not playing with You know what I mean? You're not playing with Luka Doncic. There's so much pressure when you're playing with a guy that people compare to like a LeBron James or something like that, who can make his teammates better and is clutch and can do all that. And you have to kind of show up and be that consistent number two dog, right? This situation, you're in Washington. There's no pressure. No one's looking at Washington as a team that has that guy that can potentially lead you to a championship. They're looking at, you know, this team is trying to be, we make jokes about it, right, Will T, of being, like, sometimes we say a playing team or a team that can maybe reach out to a fifth, sixth seed, right? There's no pressure. Mm-hmm. So there's no pressure. I think he can be Luke. He can be Kristaps Porzingis that we saw in New York if healthy. I think he can be that same guy.
Interesting. So I have a couple of thoughts on this, if you allow me to
go down there. When I first saw
the trade, I thought WTF. because we have our text chain, yeah, right? Our mm-hmm. group chat. My thing was, you know, yes, I wasn't a huge fan of the Davis-Perton signing. Uh-huh. I was excited about the Spencer Dinwiddie signing, especially when we got to know a little bit more about the price, I think, which was like 3 years, yeah, $58 million, which I still thought was a lot, right? Uh-huh. So for you to get those two contracts off the book, I thought, cool, good.
Yeah.
But essentially, he's doing that. He did the Ernie Grunfeld thing,
yeah,
which is you sign two terrible contracts, then you offload them, and we're supposed to celebrate that. We're supposed to applaud you.
Good point.
Now, Tommy Shepard, I don't know you. I like some of the moves you're making, but let's not start to go down this Ernie Grunfeld path of burning down, of lighting the fire to the house and then want to be celebrated because you get the fire extinguisher and you put it out before you burn it all the way down. That's one. Two, I actually, you know, even though Kristaps Porzingis has been often injured, and, you know, look, you know that I'm a Knicks fan, yeah, a diehard Knicks fan, yeah, also. When Kristaps Porzingis was used in the correct way, but was put in a position to get the ball down on the block and not simply just be a shooter out on the wing, which he became in Dallas, because Luka Doncic is a guy who needs the ball in his hand and needs to go down, you know, kind of go off of pick and rolls and get downhill to be most effective, getting the heart and the defense with the ball in his hands. I think there's an opportunity for him to offense to run through him here while Bradley Beal isn't out. Uh-huh. And even when Bradley Beal comes back, for him to be a guy who can play on the block. Porzingis put a lot of energy into kind of developing his body from his rookie year in New York up to now. And when he's been effective, he's a guy who's been able to get points in the paint and get points outside of the paint, not just be a shooter who comes off screens or a shooter who sits in the corner like Davis-Bertans was. Uh-huh. So I think there's a lot of upside to this. I'm not going to get too excited, but I think there was a lot of upside to this trade.
All right, so I posted the same question on, you know, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. So on IG, my homie Rodney said, nah, he don't think this trade's gonna make the Wizards better. I got a lot of people on injuries though. On Twitter at Barack X Coin said no, he's always injured. My man Cameron, what's going on, Cameron, on Twitter said, when healthy, yes, Porzingis causes mismatches with his size and ability to stretch the floor. Question for you, Ole. When Porzingis plays, does that mean Thomas Bryant loses his playing time? To Will's point about if you want to get the best out of Porzingis, you probably want him. You mix him up in the block and also outside. Give him some variety in his game because he's better. Like Will said in New York, he was better that way. He just wasn't shooting threes. When you have a Thomas Bryant now, what he typically does now for the Wizards, is now he's like a stretch five, right? So he's not like a post up player. So he's so basically he's predicated, if he wants to get a layup or, you know, finish, it's all predicated on screen and dive, right? So screen, dive, point guard throws him a lob, or two guard throws him a lob, or playmaker throws him a lob for a dunk, or, you know, bounce pass to finish. You can do the same thing with Kristaps or with Porzingis. So, in to be honest with you, yes, I guess his playing time could suffer for having a Porzingis. I would say this, though. When you have a Porzingis, the question I would put out there is that, does that hinder the development of being more of an impact, a possible impact player to a young guy like Rui Hachimura when you have a known commodity when healthy in a Porzingis?
I think you're right, right in a lot of your assessment, but, and I'm thinking back, right, to when Porzingis was with New York, and you also had Carmelo, and Carmelo was most effective kind of in the mid post,
yeah,
with the ball in his hand, initiating the offense.
Yeah.
The Wizards don't have a second guy who's like, who needs the ball in the mid post, and you can kind of swing it around if the double comes, and then Porzingis is open for easy threes.
Uh-huh.
I think it'd have to be a situation where you have to start Porzingis out on the block, and then,
I agree,
you know, it's got to be a high-low situation.
Yeah, I agree with you.
I'll put it like that. A high-low situation for it to be most effective with Thomas Bryant, because it seems as if this team is really intent on
the big shooting threes.
Making Thomas Bryant, him shooting threes and him being a big part of the future of this organization.
Yeah, I don't know, because, you know, you got to see, he's a seven footer. You got a seven footer. I'm talking about like Porzingis, who to me, honestly, is probably a better post player than Thomas Bryant and shoots a three ball better than Thomas Bryant. That means you can, and Porzingis is a good defender, right? Like, he's a shot blocker. So, yeah, I mean, honestly, to answer Cameron's question, I think, as now I think about it, it lowers playing time for fives, because you can utilize him in the five position. But to Will's point, if you do want to take advantage of Porzingis, you play him at the four, but you don't have my issue with that is that you don't have a five that doesn't, you know what I mean? You don't have the Wizards don't have a real five. They're all of them undersized anyway. You know what I mean? Like, Gafford is an undersized five, but your four would be bigger and taller than Gafford. You dig what I'm saying? So even if you played both of them, it may not be checked the way you want it to be. They won't be guarded the way you want them to be guarded. Now, it does give, depending on who the team you're playing against, it does give Porzingis an advantage. If a five is checking him on the perimeter, that means he's got more lateral quickness to get by a five, depending on who that five is. So, I mean, Porzingis, if used correctly, is a mismatch. You know what I mean? I will say that. If used correctly and if healthy, he can be a problem. I totally believe so. My man Q on Twitter said he's got to play to find out. I mean, I think eventually he'll play and we'll get to see it. I think Porzingis can work. I actually think you'll get to see a lot of what he has to offer. You'll get the best out of Porzingis because Bradley Beal is out for the season, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, but the biggest thing will be you'll run into the big question next year of how's it going to work with Bradley Beal and Porzingis.
Yeah, I'm very, put it this way, but without creating a new storyline for our next show down the road, I'm interested to see how they really play without Bradley Beal with Porzingis, and what happens if Porzingis is healthy and they do what I think they can do. What the conversation will be for that max deal at the end of the year? That super max deal.
Fair. That's fair.
You know what I mean? I want to see that. All right, the LA Rams are the winners of Super Bowl 56. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about the bowl after the break. You're listening to the Urban Sports Scene.
For ages.
Yetig.
Deuces on Empire Media. That's empiremedia.com.
Who you a fool for this?
Met her on the beach, so it's not nice.
Oh no, oh man, I just made a mess.
When I run it, ain't no stopping, I don't never rest. Down said hunt, kick a punt, then I make them catch. 5,000 ones in an hour, I'ma make it stretch. I just made a mess, I just made a mess. I got cash by the bundle, so I never press. I just made a mess, I just made a mess. 50-yard TD, with the winning catch. Oh no, oh no.
Listening to the Urban Sports Scene with myself, Wole, and Will T, the homie Ray Gigi's out, and we are part of Ampire Media at AmpireMedia.com.
We are back. Yes, Super Bowl 56 was Sunday. The Los Angeles Rams defeated the Cincinnati Bengals 23-20. Wole, what are your thoughts?
Oh, man, I thought it was a great game, man. Obviously, you know, Odell Beckham Jr., I felt bad for him, man. I thought he was going to go off, man. I thought he was going to put out like a Terrell Owens performance like he played when he was with the Eagles in that Super Bowl where he just tore up the whole Patriots secondary. It just looked like it had that vibe early in that game. He had like 55 yards on two catches, had a touchdown already. Then you look at – and he also reminded me of what I saw, like Julio Jones against the Patriots too. I know the Patriots are now a thing, but Julio did against the Patriots in the Super Bowl as well. He just looked like he was unstoppable because they were so geared on stopping the Super Bowl MVP, Cooper Kupp, who they couldn't stop in the last drive. So I just thought that Odell was going to look good. And when he went down with that knee injury, I was like, oh, man, felt bad for the dude. But the Rams held on. The Bengals played a great game. Their defense balled out. I know a lot of people have been getting on Eli Apple, like trashing him on social media because he's been talking junk to a bunch of, you know, Kansas City wide receivers and just throughout on social media. But dude has balled pretty much throughout this postseason. So I feel like people a little bit, I don't care. He's been talking trash, but he's been backing it up. He just got ate by one of the best receivers in the game in Cooper Kupp. And he got. And he gave the winning touchdown to Cooper Kupp to put him up 23-20. But it was a great game. Joe Burrow has nothing to be ashamed of. He's a special talent. And you know, Aaron Donald, man. I said this on Twitter, you know, and I thought it when Hakeem Wong was on the show last week when he was pretty much saying the Bengals are going to win the Bengals, and I was like, nah, the Bengals got to worry about a problem, and that problem is Aaron Donald. And it's so poetic, right? The last play, the play that ends the game is from the best defensive player in today's NFL, you know what I mean, in Aaron Donald, and how he just kind of took over and got his hands on Joe Burrow and brought him down for that incomplete and put pressure on him so he could have that for that incomplete pass to win the game. So he was clutch. He was just to me, was an all-around great game. And I love when officials don't hinder the overall game, right? I know a lot of people are complaining about, oh, the last drive for L.A. where you know, a couple penalties and whatnot. But I look, you know, we all in the sports. We know what sports is about. And if you watch the touchdown pass to Higgins, how Jalen Ramsey got the face mask yanked off. So Higgins, that's the reason why Higgins caught that football. It was basically a PI. We all know the referees do makeup calls. And to me, that was just a makeup call.
Okay, that's interesting. So I'm going to give you my thoughts.
Go ahead, bro.
I look at that Super Bowl winning sideline, two coaches specifically, Sean McVay, Raheem Morris. Where were they at? At one time?
They were in D.C., man.
Okay. That's my first point.
Yeah.
Man, it just goes to show.
Callahan, the offensive, Callahan was, who's in Cincinnati, was in D.C. too.
Yeah. Yep, you're absolutely right. It just goes to show you how many championship-level coaches have come through that organization. They haven't been able to identify,
Facts.
Retain, and grow future star coaches.
Oh, that's yeah. One. Also, don't forget Kevin O'Connell that Ron Rivera decided to not
Kevin
keep.
O'Connell.
Who Ron Rivera decided not to keep.
Who did not keep as the offensive coordinator.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So that was my first thought. And who's subsequently going to be named the head coach in Minnesota.
Yes, sir.
That was my first thought.
Uh-huh.
Second thought was it was – I like the flow of the game. There weren't too many flags called, flags. But – you know, as you stated, the Jalen Ramsey non-call, you know, depending on what position you're looking at, I actually think that it was a good no-call in a bang-bang sense of the moment, because I know if you slow it down, you see, you know, the hand wrestling, then you see him yank his face mask, but if you're looking at that play live, both of those guys were hand wrestling, trying to establish position, and it seemed as if T. Higgins tried to disengage from Jalen Ramsey and stop on the spot.
Uh-huh.
And then when he stopped on the spot, there was the pulling of the toting of the face mask, but it was such bang bang play.
Okay.
Yeah, I thought it was hard. I thought
that's a new one.
I thought once you saw it on replay in slow motion, yes.
Yeah.
It was easy to pick up, but when you're watching it live, I didn't think, you know.
Yeah.
It was egregious as it was once it was slowed down. That's two. Three. Everyone knew that the biggest difference maker in this game would be Cincinnati's offensive line versus that Rams defense, right?
Yeah.
And would the Rams defense be able to create opportunities for Aaron Donald to go one-on-one against those linemen lined up at various spots along the line with Von Miller and with Floyd? What's his name? The other linebacker.
So we... Floyd, and who was Leonard Floyd?
Yeah.
It's Leonard Floyd.
And Von Miller.
Von Miller.
Uh-huh. And Raheem Morris was able to crack the code by using that overload blitz.
Yeah, he's smart, man.
For Aaron Donald.
He's a beast.
Yeah, he is. I wonder why he didn't
get a job. Me too. I wonder. Oh, that's right. Oh, okay.
The fourth thing is, we kind of knew at some point the refs were going to make an impression on the game.
Uh-huh.
It's just that they waited the last 2 minutes to make that impression on the game. I do think that
they're all flagged, but they are penalties, though. You know that, right? They are penalties.
They were penalties.
Okay.
Yes, they were penalties.
Okay.
But we knew that the refs would be involved in the game in some way.
Yeah.
For the first three quarters, they really weren't. The first four and a half.
They weren't doing nothing. They weren't throwing no flags.
And a half, no flags. And then the last 2 minutes, those were penalties, which they correctly called. So it was an interesting game. It's an exciting game. I wanted it a very close game. Uh-huh. It wasn't a blowout. Because I remember that that Seattle Denver.
Oh my God, bro! It was the worst
blowout.
It was terrible.
Yes, we had a great halftime show.
Oh my God,
amazing halftime!
Can we talk about that real quick?
It was an amazing game.
Can we talk about? All right, halftime show, and I do want to say this, like. Your thoughts on a halftime show, and this is my opinion. No way, I'm gonna start. What were your thoughts on a halftime show? I'm gonna start with there. What were your thoughts on a halftime show?
I thought it was a great show.
Uh-huh.
I thought it had something for everyone. Yeah. You had something, you know, for people who are like into pop, Eminem, even mm-hmm. though Eminem is a very respected theater lyricist.
Uh-huh.
So you had that pop element with him, and then one of the biggest songs ever with 50 Cent in the club.
Why he look so big in that thing? Why he look bloated? What's wrong?
Hey, man, 50 gave me confidence because I'm not in shape now. And, you know, once summer comes, baby, I don't care if I'm not in shape or not. I'm busting out the white teeth.
Hey, bro. But let me say this about 50, though, because this is like, I know people have been getting on. I don't get on 50. I call it something else. My dad told me this like a while back when I used to tell him, like, you gaining weight. And he would tell me, you know what? That's evidence of good living. Like, that's evidence of good living. Like, power done this man good, man. Like, nobody can talk crap about 50. That's evidence of good living. Like, that man is making money moves, bro. Like, that's a money move. Like, that body is a money moves body, bro. Don't get it twisted. Like, that man.
That is the ultimate. I'm confident.
I'm confident. You going to. Hey, look. You,
I don't give a damn.
I don't give a damn what you say. And stars got me, and you watching me. So shut the F up. That's the type of move that is. I understood it. When I saw him, I was like, oh, yo, 50 eating good. That's that evidence of good living stuff. I feel you, bro.
When I first saw it, like, when I first saw him, I was like, who the fuck?
You good? I know, right? At first, yeah.
Then I was like, oh, damn, that's 50.
That's real, though, bro. That's real. When I saw it, I was like, yo, that's money moves right there. But, yeah, my bad. We always had to say that. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, that's true. That's absolutely true. What you said. I was like, oh damn, that's 50. But he rocked it. He killed it.
He did.
So I think it had something for. Yeah, uh-huh. I think it was. They had something for everyone.
Yeah, it was a great show, man. I'm with you. I know everybody was like. I had some people getting on me when I said like. I said the show was perfect. It was great. It was like one of the best halftime shows I've ever seen. But I was like, dang, because when Dre hit the little piano, he hit. Pac, I thought the Pac hologram was going to come on. You know what I mean?
I did too.
All right,
I thought that was going to take it over.
Me too. See, all right, so Will, you wanted that, right? I'm not in,
yeah,
like, thank you, bro. Like, folks was hating on me saying, like, nah, it was good as is. I'm like, yo, the Pac hologram would have put it over the top. Like, it would have put it over the top.
The Pac hologram in LA? Come on, man.
Yeah. What? I thought Cube would be out there too, but I guess that's too much.
Yeah, that's too, once I saw 50, I was like, I think that's
too much. Yeah, Mary J killed it too. Like Mary J killed it too. Like she killed it. That's dope. Yeah, she killed it, man. She like it was a great show, man. It really was. I will say this before we get back into football. I feel like as a whole, like this is the thing. Maybe tell me if you agree with me. And I don't know how many commercials you watch too, right? But as a whole, within production, the game. The halftime show, commercials, it may be the best Super Bowl I've seen ever.
Visually, yes.
Right? You feeling me when
yes.
I'm saying that?
I totally
all
right. agree with
all
you
right.
because
all right.
the sound of for the halftime show was amazing.
Yeah.
Like you heard the artist and you didn't hear a lot of the background noise of the crowd.
Yeah.
That's one. Two. I think the cameras that they used
on point.
Shoot the, you know, if you it was amazing. Mm-hmm. It just visually it just popped.
Yeah.
And then three, the background just like SoFi Stadium, man. I'm not an advocate of having the Super Bowl the same place every year.
Yeah.
Because I think you need to celebrate the other all 32 cities. You know.
Yeah.
Where the sport is played, mm-hmm. but. It being there every 3 years, every 5 years, I don't think would be a bad thing for the NFL.
Hey, you know who was there, right?
Who?
My brother.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, he was there.
King Guy was there?
He was there. And with good seats, sweet seats. Got to meet some celebrities. Got to meet some celebs.
How do you pull that off?
Work, man. You know what I'm saying? Work, man. Celebs, man. He got a great experience, man. But I have to talk to him later tonight just to get the overall
I would love to have King Al come on next week and give us his experience.
You know what? We can do that. We can do that. We got time. I know Ray got a guest for next week, Mike for Howard. But I think I would love to have him on too to talk about it. You know what I mean? I think.
Yeah, see if we can get that, you know, give us his first.
Actually, you know what?
First impression.
I would love to get him on now. See if I can get him on before we end the show. Let's see. You know, we got some time.
We'll keep talking. You know, if you can see if you can get him on, man. So I would love to hear from his perspective.
Yeah.
How was it an experience?
Yeah, for you, so, you know, this question's been thrown out there right now about Matthew Stafford. He has his first ring. He's been in the league for 13 years. Stats are, you know, pretty good. Do you think Matthew Stafford
is a
Hall of Famer? Okay. You, my man, hit me with the hell no. All right, why? Come on, elaborate.
Matthew Stafford, when we think of Hall of Fame quarterbacks, right?
Uh-huh.
And it's like Richard Sherman said, if we're going to give Matthew Stafford the Hall of Fame, then it becomes the let's be honest, it becomes the Hall of slightly above average.
Yeah, but I mean, what
Matthew Stafford has compiled some stats, but have those stats led to winning?
But this is the thing. I think Richard Sherman is looking. Okay, so this is the thing, which I do get what Richard Sherman is talking about, but it also everything's with you got to look at what it comes with. All right, for Matthew Stafford was in, like, Detroit, and that sucks. And, like, that organization wasn't helping him to win games. And he even took that team to a postseason and competed prior to, like, the last couple of years to be a playoff team with, you know, lack of talent ever since Megatron left. So he's had, like, good seasons and has been productive, has been good. It's like, for instance, all right, I'm going to use just Richard Sherman as an example. Is Richard Sherman the same Richard Sherman without Earl Thomas and Cam Chancellor?
No.
So that's what I'm saying. And he's a Hall of Famer, right?
But he, over a period of time, was one of the most feared
great
defenses.
Uh-huh.
And at a point of time, it was arguably
was
the best corner.
No, I don't argue that. And go ahead, I'm sorry, I don't want to jump. Go ahead.
And then I'm going to follow up with this. I think the one stat that we kind of universally, well, now we're kind of looking at as kind of the barometer of what's a good quarterback is.
Was it championships?
No, there are two stats. Completion, even though completion percentages are inflated, and rating, quarterback rating.
Yeah.
Right?
Uh-huh.
This year was Matthew Stafford's only his second year of having a quarterback rating of 100 or better.
Good point.
Throughout his career.
Mm-hmm.
Right? He's had some 90s.
Which isn't bad.
No, which isn't bad at all. But in today's era of football, when we think of the best quarterbacks, what do we think of? A completion rate above 65. Rating over at 100 or better, right? And that 100 rating, when we think of quarterback Hall of Fame quarterbacks, is probably like 5 to 7 years consistent.
Yeah, I would like to see him compared to, like, his stats compared to a Big Ben, Eli, who everyone thinks is a Hall of Famer, because those dudes, to me, have flaws, too. You know what I mean? But they won Super Bowls, right? There's multiple Super Bowls, right? So, but that's going to put them over the top to a lot of people. Like, Eli's, like, we also can include, like, being clutch. Matthew Stafford, if you look at his stats, is one of the most clutch quarterbacks in the NFL.
That's true.
You know what I mean?
That's
so, it's just like, and for a lot of quarterbacks, that's kind of gotten them over the top. And I know we're in a different era. You can argue, and I've always said this, you can make the argument, like, you can look at Troy Aikman. He has multiple championships, but and it's a different era. But even within his era, right, his stats aren't the best stats in the world. Even with his in his own era, but he's a Super Bowl. He's a Hall of Famer.
Yeah, I challenge anyone to look at Donovan McNabb.
Yes.
Versus.
There you go.
John Elway.
Yes. Look at some stats. Detroit. Yeah. Look at Donovan. I would challenge you to say, look at Randall Cunningham. I even go, look at Randall Cunningham's stats. There's no rings, but look at them. Compared to some of the dudes in the 90s that you fall in love with that are Hall of Famers. So, I mean, yeah, but it depends. I see what Richard Sherman's coming from. I'm not arguing with it. But I do think that quarterbacks get a little bit of a pick-me-up when it comes to Hall of Fame because when they win a championship. And if their stats are a certain number, they reach a certain number, they're in. And I feel like it's been like that for years, though. Because Eli, to your point, Wilty, in terms, like, Eli has playoff runs, correct? They're not season dominance. They're playoff runs. They're not season dominance. You know what I mean? So, but he's going to get rewarded for playoff dominance, for playoff runs, excuse me, playoff runs. It's not like, you know, if Peyton Manning had Eli's playoffs, Peyton Manning would be like the GOAT. So it's just but Peyton is dominant in the regular season. It's real.
No, I agree. Like if you look at, I don't think there's, you know, because of where Eli Manning played, he got two championships in New York, which people are going to say is the hardest market, the hardest fan base, and you know the nostalgia of New York football. They're going to automatically put him in there, right?
Yeah.
And you look at Eli Manning's stats, and you think of Super Bowl or Hall of Fame quarterbacks. Like you said, Eli Manning had two amazing Super Bowl runs, which was aided by a defense.
Yes, that's that
you
too.
You can't necessarily say Eli Manning was the reason that they won, although, you know, the play that he made against the Patriots to what's my man's name?
To David, who's Tyrell? David Tyrell?
David Tyree.
Yeah, Tyree.
Was amazing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Yeah, David Tyree, and then that pass to Plexico.
Yep, and he had one to Mario Manningham, too, was a good pass.
Yeah. And another Super Bowl.
Yeah.
So those moments right there are going to kind of propel him in people's mind to being a Hall of Fame quarterback.
Definitely. So, all right, another question for you, Will. The Bengals, great run for the Bengals. I'm going to give the Bengals their flowers. They had a great run. They did with a lot of folks didn't expect them to get to this level. Their quarterback tore his ACL the prior year, and he's done this, right? So can you see them getting back to the big game?
With that quarterback and that wide receiver, absolutely.
Wide receivers.
He's going to make that off, you know, the guys in those those prime skill positions on the offense, Burrow, Mixon, Higgins, Chase. That's a formidable trio to try to stop, right?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, at the skill position, and then Joe Burrow's, you know, an amazing quarterback. So absolutely, but first you got to build that offensive lineup around him. And the second thing is you need to get some more depth, more weapons, right?
Yeah.
So you can't just key on Higgins and Chase.
Yeah, I think that they have, like to your point, man, I think that they can definitely get back. They got to show up that old line. So he can survive. because what we saw was horrible. I mean, but again, he was going against one of the better defensive lines in football, right? And what we saw in the LA Rams, but that's been a problem all year. It was a problem against the Titans in the postseason, in the divisional game, and we saw it, you know, rear its ugly head against the Rams. But they can definitely get back. But it will be harder, right, in the AFC. Because there's so many dogs in terms of quarterbacks in the AFC that he's going to have to battle. And young dogs, too, man. We talked about them on this show with Herbert, you got Burrow, you got Mahomes. I mean, you got Mahomes, excuse me. You have Josh Allen. There are so many dogs out there that know, it's competition, man. And you know, he's just – and Lamar Jackson. How can I forget about Lamar Jackson? Lamar Jackson. There's so much competition to a point where it can't be like that every year. You know what I'm saying? But to your point, though, he has a lot of talent in the skill positions. So – it's going to be tough, but they got the skill set and the defense. I think the defensive core, they got a defensive coordinator, a great scheme, and guys who are willing to compete and fight. And you saw that in the postseason. On IG, old_school_76 said, and this is about Matthew Stafford and the Bengals, said, no, Stafford is not in the Hall of Fame quarterback. He showed nothing, still looked like the true quarterback from the Lions with the picks and the way he played. Darnold was the reason why Aaron Donald was the reason why the Rams won. If not that last stop, the Bengals would have sent it to overtime.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a little extreme. It's a little extreme. I thought he played well. I mean, the two interceptions were bad.
I think, look, he made some bad passes, which most quarterbacks are going to make.
Yes.
During the course of a game, especially a big game.
Yes.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Did he play terrible? No. Did he make the play when he needed, where it was most important? Absolutely.
Uh-huh.
That pass to Cooper Kupp was...
it's a good pass.
Perfection.
Yeah.
That's something you could tell that they practiced. They put in a lot of time over these months that they've been together.
Facts.
Because he placed that ball perfect.
It was near...
only Cooper Kupp could get it on his back shoulder.
And they said that they typically run that play only for Odell. They don't usually run that for Cooper Kupp. You know what I mean? So, I mean, I'm with you, Will. I think that he played well. I think he did his job. I thought he had a good game. I felt like he pressed a lot when Odell went down. I think that bomb that he threw for that interception in the back of the end zone was like, you know what? Jefferson, I'm going to give you an opportunity to make a play. I would say that I didn't like, you know, If you compare, all right, I talked about Higgins with the offensive pass interference. I mean, yeah, Higgins with the offensive pass interference on Jalen Ramsey. How he fought, but he fought back for the ball because it wasn't like the ball was on stride. He fought back and made a play, pass interference or whatever you want to call it. But on the bomb, on the play to Jefferson on the interception, the first interception that Stafford threw, he didn't fight back for the football. If you watched it, he didn't fight back for that ball on the back of the end zone. He didn't fight back. He just let it happen. And in the second interception, that Notre Dame wide receiver, the rookie, he's trash. I'm sorry. Like, dude put one hand out. He's trash, bro. Like, he's trash. Like, he's not good. And he's the same dude that dropped that easy bomb, I think, in the NFC Championship game. Like, it was a bomb he dropped. Like, yeah, he should not. Sean McVay, and your team, he shouldn't get in playing time. Like, don't do that. Like, don't do that. That wasn't a good look. But anyway, just time to close the show out. Hey, subscribe to our podcast on Stitcher, Spotify, iTunes, TuneIn, iHeart, and Google Podcasts. Just search the Urban Sports Scene. Also, tweet us at Urban Sports Scene. Hit us up on our IG page, which is at Urban Sports Scene. And check us out on our Urban Sports Scene Facebook page. Make sure you subscribe to the Urban Sports Scene YouTube channel as well. Check out the home of the Urban Sports Scene, Empire Media, at AmpireMedia.com. And this show can be found on Podcast DC. Download the Podcast DC app to hear all of the Empire shows as well as other great content. Thank you all for tuning in to the Urban Sports Scene. Will T and I appreciate you. Anyway, you've been listening to the Urban Sports Scene.
Ages.
Yeah, dig.
Deuces.
Hey, Mega, lead us out, big homie.